You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Very good to see you here in Shelter. Thank you for coming along. No big introductions really, but can I just say nostalgia ain't what it used to be. People of Greenbelt, please give it up for Andy Turner.
And Paul Vincent is here, ladies and gentlemen, as well. Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. So,
thank you.
We're putting this on because you're all here, I suspect, because Pip Wilson. We think of Pip. We remember Pip. We encountered Pip in our life. Pip was a youth worker. He was a manager of a large YMCA down in Romford, a group worker, a writer, involved in all kinds of things. And I don't know what your encounter with Pip is or was. What we want to do is to just... Pip died last September, and we miss him. And we wanted a moment... here at the festival, just to take a breath, huddle up, share some stories and memories of a remarkable person who changed my life and had a huge impact and maybe had something of the same with your life. So we wanted to have a moment to batten down the hatches and share some stories and celebrate this remarkable life. And we're going to do that zigzagging around a little bit. I mean, we've kind of plotted this, Paul, but, you know, you were saying...
Yeah, we've plotted this. We know what we're doing. There is a plan. There is a plan.
But it's going to be like a rolling mag, you know.
It's going to be like rolling mag.
Exactly.
And in fact, you know, think of putting your tunes on shuffle. You never quite know what you're going to get next, but you know all the tunes are good.
So we are going to shuffle through some of the stories of Pip's life, and there'll be a narrative. We're going to zip back to St. Helens, hear a bit about life there. We'll go to the Mayflower Centre, Romford YMCA. We're going to have some time listening to people talk about Greenbelt, Rolling Mag, Baking Trifle, all of that stuff, Stinking Late. So we've got people popping in. Trouser TV, any viewers? Yes, we'll talk about Trouser Telly and... Pip's life and his move to Whitstable. So we're going to move around a bit. Paul, just to kick us off, how did you meet Pip? What happened?
I met Pip in 1985. So my background is I'm a youth worker. Any other youth workers here today? Hands up. Let's see.
Come on, louder, pal. We can do better than that. Any youth workers here? That was better.
So I went to work at the Mayflower Centre, which was a community centre, youth club, church, based in Canning Town, East 16, London East 16. Yes?
Yes.
And I knew things were going to be all right when I turned up there and realized that one of the main roads outside was called Vincent Street. So it was a sign.
There you go. Hey, you're there. And tell us, you worked with Pip because he was at the Mayflower for a few years. What was the takeaway? What's the thing that's kind of shaped your work or life? What's the headlines? The takeaway?
I mean, look, we all know Pip was incredible and we're going to be hearing and sharing stories about that. I think it's very difficult to put into words, but Pip really was able to bring out the humanity within each person that he encountered, the godly humanity within each person that he encountered. Especially so where that individual person may not have seen or recognized or valued or even believed their worth and their the godly humanity within them. And I think that's my biggest impression of Pip. Yeah. But there's so many and we're going to hear lots of little snippets and stories and encounters today. But very special, man.
Yeah. I'm going to ask Rach to come up in a minute and read a little note we had from Chrissy, who is up in St. Helens, who can't be with us. But before we do, just a couple of notices. First of all, it's such a privilege to have Joan and Joy and Anne Wilson Clan here. So lovely. So a big welcome to those guys. Fantastic. And we're going to record this. So there'll be opportunities. We're going to have the mic here. We'd like to hear from you. And your recollections and stories. Some of you are sitting on all kinds of insights about Pip. So there'll be opportunities to come to the mic. We want you to do that. But before, just to get going, Rach, come up and let's just have a little moment. This is from Chrissy, who's in St. Helens. You're going to read this.
my memories of Pip Wilson. I have known Pip and Joan all my life as close family members. When I was a little girl, Pip was a young officer in the Boys' Brigade Company, of which my father was the captain. I remember Pip being a live wire full of fun and humour. My father and Pip had deep love and respect for each other and got on really well as friends and colleagues, even though there was an age gap and they were almost polar opposites in terms of style and personality. When my father died in 2009, I was very touched that Pip and Joan came up north to attend his funeral. What Pip and my father shared was a deep Christian faith and a commitment to the well-being of the boys and young men they were working with. This continued to be the theme of Pip's ongoing career, which I followed with great interest. Pip and Joan, as house parents in a Cheshire-approved school, running the youth group Y Club in Parr, St Helens, the YMCA in St Helens, the Mayflower Centre in London's East End, and the Y in Romford. Where Pip and Joan were living and working, I used to love visiting them and their daughters, dipping into their lives and seeing what they were up to. Pip clearly cherished a challenge. He never went for the easy options, and he seemed drawn to work in tough and demanding settings. He never became hardened or disillusioned. Pip was an original, a one-off. He had a real gift for communication, combined with a deep love for people. He retained great warmth, gentleness, and optimism in his relationships, though he could sometimes be disarmingly direct and thought-provoking with his questions. In recent years, my main contact with Pip was online via his many inspirational posts on Facebook and sharing blob characters. The concept of Pipology had existed long before the era of online memes, but his direct and punchy style of wise words and reflections fitted well into this new medium and reached a much wider audience. Pip maintained his energy and drive into his later life, remaining forever young because of the openness and freshness of his mind and spirit, and his eagerness to share his experience with the next generation of leaders. He kept going until his health made it no longer possible. Pip was the front man of his mission. But Pip and Joan...
And there's going to be... It's okay, take a moment. There's going to be emotions, there's going to be feelings, and that's all right. We know that Pip worked with feelings, and... Today is very much about us all joining together. There's no us and them, me and you. It's a big we here today. And we're going to be sharing at different levels. And it's okay. Thank you. Just wanted to say that.
Sorry. Pip and Joan were always a team. He could not have achieved what he did or kept going for as long as he did.
Thank you. He could have not achieved what he did or kept going for as long as he did without the solid love and support of Joan. Joy and Anne, to whom he was devoted. What he allowed himself of retirement, he enjoyed with Joan, his daughters, and his beloved granddaughters. It's hard to believe that Pip is no longer with us, but his influence and the impact of his love and his work will continue to be felt in the lives of those who knew him and loved him. That's from Chris McLaughlin near Rimmer, who can't be here, but a mate of Pip's going back to St. Helens. Thanks, Rach, for reading that out. Thank you. So I just wanted to get us started. I wonder if you could turn into groups of two or three, huddle up, and just share that moment that you encountered Pip. Maybe the standout, because there's so many. What's the big, encounter that you had with Pip? Pip in your life. And secondly, the big takeaway. A few minutes, huddle up, threes, twos or threes, lean in and share a little bit, and we can talk about it. We'll come back. Let's pump up the music. And we'll ask those questions. Thanks.
Thank you, guys.
And get sharing. Thank you.
Okay, let's come back, folks. So, I don't know if you're feeling...
Wow.
Woo! So many stories and stuff.
Wow.
We've got Martin Joseph popping up in a minute. He's going to come in later. And we've got Ben Ockerfer as well, who'll be passing by. And Big John is going to sing as well. So we've got some really good stuff coming along. Now, I don't know if you found that you've got a story to share or to tell. It'd be lovely if anyone got a particular reflection or an insight, a moment they're happy to share with others. Is that okay? Can we do that? We've got a microphone here. Yeah, come on up there. Yeah. Just introduce yourself. I know you're known to so many, but yeah.
Hi, my name's Steve, and I've been coming to Greenbelt since, forever, really. And
it's a long time.
Long time.
Yeah.
And Pip Wilson was always part of the framework there. And apart from all the fantastically silly, stupid games that would never be allowed now, they really wouldn't, I tell you. The biggest impact he had on me was when I got back to work. I worked in an office, and there was a really garrulous old guy there that had no time for God, no time for church, no time for anybody, really. Everything was bad. And when I come back from Greenbelt, he says, "Where you been?" "Oh, I've been to Greenbelt, this festival." "Oh, anyone I've ever heard of?" And I said, there's a few bands, a guy called Pip Wilson. "Pip Wilson? I won't hear a word said against him. That guy, he runs a Mayflower Centre. He's absolutely, the stuff he does with kids is fantastic. Don't say anything about him." So if he can have that effect against... Wouldn't it be great if more people could have that effect?
Great story. Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Wow. A lovely...
Thank you.
Yeah, great use of the word garrulous.
Fantastic.
Anyone else? Anyone else? Quick moment. We're going to have the Mayflower going up in a second, but come on. Yeah, go. Come down.
If I could stretch this microphone, I would. But yeah, that was a good run.
Hello. I'm Nicola. And originally, remember Pip, of course, from Stinking Late Show and, all that. But then went to the Angels weekends in the early 2000s, which some of you might remember. And I had tend to have opinions and got invited onto what was called the management group and met Pip. Yes. And Andy was my buddy. But really just being on that group, suddenly going down to London once a month from the north, Pip just really... made you feel listened to, made you feel welcomed. Yeah. And that really gave me confidence to end up doing lots of other things with Greenbelt. So, and in the rest of life.
Thank you. A brilliant story. I love that. Is Andy Cribb here? Andy Cribb, he's a member of the trustees. He was another ally from the north, and Pip welcomed him in. Like sisterhood, brotherhood. Anyway, we need to hear about the Mayflower. Paul.
Fantastic. Yes. So just before I'm going to call up some of the Mayflower crew, so get yourselves ready. Just want to say, obviously, this has been, we put this program together today to get as much in as possible. You know, it's not going to follow a very strict chronological order. The narrative, the stories, the memories, the timelines, we're going to be jumping around all over the place. But that doesn't matter, does it? Doesn't matter, does it? Because we're here to share fantastic memories and experiences about Pip. And we want to also hear what's the living legacy that Pip has left with you? What's the impact that Pip Wilson has made in your life? And that's one of the key takeaway questions we would love people to be thinking on now, thinking about now, sharing, and getting ready to share later on, okay? So, we've prepared you, and let's move on. So, I'd like to call out a few people from the Mayflower Centre. I can see Debbie, I know Dave's around. Anyone else who identifies with the Mayflower Centre, Canning Town, please come on up.
Yeah.
Come on up. So, yes, Jim. Fantastic. So, I'm going to introduce these guys in a sec. Let's do it now. So,
my name's Dave Harris.
I first met Pip in August 1975 when he looked for a DJ to work with him at Mayflower Youth Club.
Fantastic.
Since 1975, there's not been a year that we haven't met.
Thank you, Dave. And
Debbie? Hi, I'm Debbie. I turned up at the Mayflower to volunteer in 1981 when I was just turned 18. And that was my first encounter with Pip. And I would say that from that moment was such a pivotal moment in the direction of my life. And I can say a bit more about why.
Fantastic. And Jim.
Hi, my name's Jim. I actually encountered Pip here at Greenbelt, but that was after I'd moved into the Mayflower with Paul in the summer of 1985, which was moving into a community that had been shaped by Pip and where people had been impacted by Pip. So I felt Pip before I even met Pip. And that was an extraordinary thing.
Thank you, Jim. Jim Harris, Fat and Frantic, everybody. Yeah. Woohoo! Couldn't resist that. So, actually, Debbie, would you like to maybe just, for those who don't know, just tell us a little bit about what the Mayflower was before we perhaps delve a little bit more into stories about Pip?
Right. Back then, it was a family centre, really, based around the Mayflower Church. And Pip and Joan lived on the site, and Pip was the lead youth worker there, along with Doug and Jeff at the time. And Dave and I were in the youth work team together. And so there was many things going on in the centre, but the youth club, the Mayflower Youth Club, was kind of where we were all rooted, along with you, Paul.
Fantastic. And Dave, you were telling me that, I arrived there 85, but you were telling me that you were there from
75. I was introduced because Pip wanted a DJ at the youth club. This was a very, very hard youth club to work at. And the members there would look at you and torture you and stab you. That's how hard it was, and I was one of the first local.
Nothing to do with the records you were playing.
Nothing to do with records I was playing. No. Okay. I was behind a locked door when we started, and the disco room, I was behind a booth with a black glass screen, so they couldn't even see me, so I opened the door and then opened another steel door, and that was locked behind me, and that's where I was. And then he wanted this to be brought downstairs for the young people. And again, when we brought it downstairs, I was still behind a door. And it took a few years before we brought it out into the youth club itself. And by then, it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful, And we had a jukebox in the corner, if you remember what a jukebox is. And wonderful days. And he taught me a lot. He taught me how to work with young people. He saw something in me that I never saw in myself. And I sort of followed him because he was working in a children's home. I worked in a children's home. But it must have been because of him. And he did social work with people. I did social work with people.
Fantastic. It's beautiful. Beautiful, yeah. Thank you, Dave. We'll come back to
Thanks.
You. So, Debbie, yes. Show your appreciation at any time. Thank you. Debbie, Dave just started to give us a little flavour of the atmosphere of the club there. Can you tell us a little bit about what you remember happening on a typical club night, if there is ever such a thing?
Well, what Pip created was a real sense of community and a team. So the youth work team, whoever you were, whether you were a volunteer or whether you were a paid member of the team, Pip created a sense of kind of inclusion and equality amongst us all. And it was always, the youth work was very intentional. We had meetings before and we thought about what we were doing and people were allocated roles. And then we had a debrief afterwards. And I think that practice, it was really embedded in the time when youth work practice was really an important thing. I don't think we really have that now. But it was a time when Frontier Youth Trust was very strong and there was a lot of investment into the practice of how you worked with young people. And Pip's approach, which I think has stayed with me always, was about relationships. It was all about relationships. So it was relationships with your team members, but it was relationships with the young people and how you went deeper with everyone.
Yeah. Thank you. So there was certainly a lot more going on than warm Coke and crisps and so on. How's your pool these days? Can you still got it?
I was useless at pool then. I'm still pretty useless at pool.
Wonderful. Jim, tell us a little bit about your memories of Mayflower.
The thing that really struck me when I arrived, and I came from a kind of sheltered northwest London suburban background, so Canning Town was a very new environment for me, was the sense that the kids who came to the youth club had of owning the place, of belonging to the place, and of it belonging to them. And I think that was a really direct outworking of Pip's very simple and straightforward and profound message that they were valuable and they were worth something and they were beautiful. And in owning that sense of themselves, they came to own the work and the youth group and the place and the building and each other to some extent. You know, I remember working with kids who were in really committed deep friendships with one another. It wasn't always helpful that they were in those committed deep, but there was a sense of ownership, of belonging, and of value in the people that I met.
I think we call it gangs, actually, Jim, but yeah. But I know what you mean. Yeah. And yeah, so many fantastic things. So we've heard a few key words, buzzwords here: community, investment, belonging, intentionality, and I think I'm going to add theology, an approach to working with people, an approach to working with young people. So one of my proudest moments, I have to say, when I was at the Mayflower, and I was only there for a couple of years, but not long before I was finishing, I decided to help to empty the budget a little bit by booking Fat and Frantic and Ben O'Caffell to play in the church hall, in the main church hall in the centre. And it was absolutely fantastic. And I'm not quite sure how I managed to persuade them to part with the money and put it up with the management committee, but they did. So there you go. Those were the days. So thank you, guys. We're going to call you back at different times because there's so many different sort of connections that these guys have. And we're going to sort of, Andy.
Yeah, we should talk about level 5. People ever come across that phrase? Did Pip use that much? Would you recall that? We should get the level 5 group up. There is a group called level 5 who've met with Pip, I think. Well, we need to hear about it. So where's Angie? And come on up.
Thank you, guys.
If level 5 triggers
you... Come on up, level 5.
Come on up. We need to meet.
Dave, you can stay here.
Thank you.
So maybe you could introduce yourselves on the line. Gosh, there's more of you than I thought. You've grown since this morning. That's fantastic. So, we'll run the microphone down.
Yeah, let's be up here.
Yeah.
So just very briefly introduce yourselves. Make it quite brief, but take your time, but hurry up.
Thanks.
My name's Tim Lovejoy.
Tim, nice to have you.
I'm Anne.
Welcome, Anne.
I'm Deborah.
Bob.
Dave.
Angie.
Brilliant. Could one of you just describe, what is Level 5, the Level 5 group? How did it come about and what is it?
This group started as a group of crusaders who went to the Mayflower Family Centre for a work party. There were 12 of us that went, and out of that a friendship formed. Pip clicked with us and we clicked with him. He did 3 group sessions with us, which made a huge impact on us.
Yeah.
And for some reason that I not sure I know why, made an impact on him as well, I think.
Yeah.
And we've kept meeting ever since. And so can I describe what Level 5 is?
Yeah,
so,
please.
One of the authors that Pip loved was a guy called John Powell. And he wrote a number of fantastic books, which I would highly recommend to you. Mm. And in one of his books, he spoke about five levels of conversation. So the first level is cliched conversation about the weather. The second level would be gossip or stuff like that. The third level is when you begin to share an opinion with somebody. The fourth level is when you talk about your feelings. And level five is when you're absolutely, completely transparent and honest with another person. So as you would already have heard, communication and depth of communication was extremely significant for Pip. And our group have aspired to share completely honestly with one another ever since with the help of Pip.
Wow. So I don't know, Anne, if you wanted to just talk, you met annually. How did you feel going along to one of these level five sessions and what did you come away with?
Right. So I'm going to say I'm slightly an outlaw.
Okay.
Because my husband, Simon, was an original member of level five, but I feel so part of level five because Pip and the rest of the group completely, you know, enfolded me within it.
Simon was such a significant person. Could you tell us a little bit about Simon and Pip's involvement with his life and at the end, please?
Yeah. So Simon was part of the original group. He was 16 when he met Pip and himself and Bob came up from Portsmouth for the group, the work group. And
gate crash, because it wasn't actually a crusader.
Oh, was it?
A non-crusader, okay.
And but you know, Pip, you know, was completely part of Simon's life. And formation is the thing that Simon talked to me about Pip before I ever met Pip, you know. And Pip then just became part of our support network, Simon and my support network.
Yeah.
And Joan and Pip were completely significant in my life when Simon became, you know, terminally ill.
Yeah.
And Pip never, ever, ever stopped, you know, being that support for me and for our two children. Yeah. So, you know, to say that, you know, Pip was a significant part of our lives is an understatement.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, Simon loved him dearly, you know. So, so it was a real pleasure to be part of.
Thank
of
you
the
so
group.
Much for sharing that. I know that Simon was such a significant person. So, that's great. I wonder if we move the microphone on. Would you like to? I'm sorry.
Hi, I'm Deborah.
Deborah, would you want to just share your memories and thoughts about Level 5, going along to one of those sessions and maybe what you'd have to feel like you were involved in? And
okay. Well, after kind of all these years, I still feel quite lucky, very lucky, because my mother brought me up to the Mayflower in 1980. And you don't mind if I say this, Dave? No, I know you don't. That she took one look at Dave and wanted to take me home. So, and we come from a very kind of different, so I'm just still, after all these years, still incredibly lucky that she actually didn't. So what was the question? Sorry.
Well,
sorry.
Tell us about how it impacted on your life, this group.
Okay. Well, there's something about level five that has you can communicate and talk a lot to people, but the thing when you get to level five is that actually there aren't many words. That kind of level of communication, it's so deep and strong that really it's very difficult to put into words. And it's more of just a presence and a feeling, really. And it's just a, you just, it allows you to just be completely honest. I mean, it was just so natural for us to do. I think we, I don't really know why exactly. It was just very, we ask each other very little.
Yeah.
But I think that when we come away, I know for myself that I kind of learn a lot from what I've said, you know, that just by the space and just by, I suppose, listening to myself. I think just sometimes we talk too much. I know I do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dave, you want to say something?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
just to add that to that, when we speak to each other, we think about what we say and about how we say it. As a level five, we don't have to think about what we say or what we say, because we know what we say will be accepted by each other. We don't slag each other off. We don't tell each other off. We just accept who they are for what they are. And, you know, no holds barred at the end of the day.
So would you like to reply to Mum?
sister, yeah.
We'll leave that.
Now, Bob, could you just describe a little bit about Blob Tree, which it feels as though that emerged out of. Did that come out of level five, or?
Well,
and that, it seems to me it's another way of this kind of very vulnerable communication and a way of listening to each other.
Pip was very, very good at exploiting people, and I say that very tongue in cheek. So as we were a level five group, and then he brought that. Well, he brought it to the world, didn't he? That,
yeah.
And he brought the blobs to the world. That was through, I was, funny enough, because it's all kind of internet connected, isn't it? I needed a graphic designer to design some tickets for a Ben Okafor gig that I was putting on at the, Bico Bar, in Coventry Polytechnic. And so just on that, it'd be nice if students named their bars after Palestinians who are standing up against apartheid now.
Yes, to that.
But yeah, in the Bico Bar. So I needed some tickets. He designed some tickets for me. So I got to know Ian. And then it was around about the time that the Rolling Magazine was kicking off.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I.
This is Ian Long.
Who draws, draws Pip's ideas in the form of blobs. And so I introduced Ian to Pip, and Ian became the Rolling Magazine artist for a while.
And it was so progressive. You used to call it non-sexist blob. It was kind of deliberately, that very intentionally, trying to be broad and inclusive.
Well, I think what the blobs do, it enable people to talk about their feelings, talk about where they are, get to a deeper place. And I think that's what Pip has done for all of us, taken us to a deeper place.
And are you still meeting as level five?
Yeah, we do.
That right?
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah, we're still drinking his coffee at Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to skip Dave. Angie, will you tell us a little bit about Level 5 and your involvement with Pip? Because,
It's really odd, isn't it? 44 years.
Is that right?
That we've been meeting together. And in the early days, that was, we would meet three, four times a year. And there was a format to it. So the level five sounds like we were all randomly sitting around and being very honest with each other. But we were given, we gave each other an hour each. And we would sit there. And it is the oddest thing to be privileged with people who love you going, how are you doing? And would sit there, and there'd always be a pause at the beginning, and it would be like, do you want questions? Do you just want to talk? Yeah. And depending on where we were in our personal lives or what was going on, we would sometimes, you know, ask me anything. And Pip would come in with a super deep first kickoff question. One of the things that he consistently and persistently did with us was to push us to identify our emotions. and to identify what we were feeling at any point in time.
Which is hugely vulnerable.
Oh, and really difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, genuinely really difficult. If you're, you know, you're in the middle of a whatever the experience is, and someone says to you, what are you feeling?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't actually know.
Yeah.
And he made us slow down.
Yeah.
And put language to actually the experiences that we were going through.
Yeah, yeah.
And after 44 years, I still struggle so much. If you say, what am I feeling? I go, hold on, I'm going to just...
Because it's
hard. Yeah, it's really hard. But that was the biggest gift of him, you know, and I was saying to you that, you know, that Pip was able to make you feel like, you know, you were the only person in the room.
Yeah.
And he, the attentiveness that he gave and how he listened was phenomenal.
Yeah.
If we all listened just a little bit like Pip, it would be an amazing thing.
You went on to work with Pip later on.
Yeah.
Tell us about what your work was towards more recently.
Yeah. Okay. Well, actually, I bumped into some trainees today who I trained about 14 years ago, and they would have had Pip come in. I train religious education teachers, secondary teachers at King's College London. And I just, you know, I just said, Pip, I need you in. So, and he did that every year really willingly. And
what would he do?
So he would come in. So I'm training teachers. And those of you who are teachers, and there are probably some in the audience, it's a tough gig.
Yeah.
Really tough and made more difficult because of the context that schools are in and the expectations, and schools are places often of fear and worry. And that's not just the kids.
Yeah.
That's a lot of the staff as well. And so I'm training up. And so I would do a day with Pip on developing emotional literacy.
Yeah.
And getting the trainees to realize, Pip used to say, do you remember that phrase he had? Put on your own oxygen mask.
Yeah, I use it.
Before you actually try and help anybody else.
Yeah.
So, and I would be, when he would come in, I would genuinely have such mixed emotions myself.
Yeah.
I was really nervous because a lot of the trainee teachers, this was entirely new.
Yeah.
And this was not something that they thought was going to be on their teacher training curriculum. So I would be nervous because I knew that some people would hate it, would be so challenged by it. And some people would love it.
Yeah.
And there was that mix probably in the majority of years. I have to say, by the end of every session, I don't think there was anyone
who
he didn't manage to pull round.
Yeah.
And he did that beautifully. But we used blob trees, blob classrooms.
Yeah.
He got them to identify, look back at their own experiences as pupils in school and to think about the implications of their experiences for what they were then going to do when they were teachers in the classroom. And he got them to own that. We talked about transactional analysis, so parent, adult, child. He would just get them to analyze body language.
Yeah, that's right.
Get them to listen, to watch, watch videos and analyze actually what it was that was going on in classrooms and that type of thing. One of the things that he showed one year was he did some work at a college up north. And the college, the head teacher had basically just gone, there are 1,000 priorities and I really should be doing cognitive science or whatever it is, but I want my school to be a community. And so we got Pip up and they would have small groups with year sevens right through to the year 13s. They would have teachers in those small groups. They would have admin staff. They would have dinner ladies. They'd have the caretakers. They'd have Pip organizing the whole thing. Everyone spread around in their small groups and Pip would be asking questions like, when was the last time you cried?
Yeah.
And the young, I remember one particular clip in it where there was a young male history teacher who said,
last week, and the response from the kids, they were wide-eyed, and it was like, oh, this is a totally new thing. And they opened up, and it was a beautiful thing.
This is for real. Angie, thanks for sharing. We need to move on. I'm really grateful. But thank you to Angie, to Dave, Bob, Deborah, Anne, and Tim. We need to wrap up. And
Just want to have a very quick last word, but Tim.
Okay, quickly. Yeah.
Sometimes what people leave you with over a long period of time that makes such a difference. And I got married, Alison and I got married in June, me marrying for the first time. And we are reading Will the Real Me Please Stand Up by John Powell, so that we deepen our emotional connection with each other.
Lovely stuff.
No, I was given
that.
Yeah,
by yeah. Yeah. Rich book. Hey, level 5 group, ladies and gentlemen. Beautiful. Big round of applause. Thank Amazing. You. Okay. We're going to have Martin Joseph come up now. So, Martin, I don't know if you want to come and get your guitar and get all set up. And we'll then come back and we'll hear from Phil about Romford YMCA, Emma, a little bit about Gutter Feelings. And then we've got Willie and Martin Rowe, Willie Williams and Martin Rowe, talk about Greenbelt and Stinking Lay. And we might just run over by a scintilla as we listen to Ben O'Keefe. And Big John's going to play as well. So we've got loads to squeeze in. Goodness. You're right there, Martin. Good. Shall I give you a microphone to sing with? Here it is.
There you go.
Got one there.
That would help. Thank you.
Martin Joseph, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. I won't keep you long. I first met Pip at Aintree Racecourse in 1984. We weren't at the races to watch GGs or anything. Hey, Dave. It's nice to see you, my friend. Yeah, no, I didn't mean that. I was just saying hello, bro. Well, the same thing. It's like been 20 years. I said, Dave, get the sound right. Here we go. All right. Okay. Good. But anyway, I was there. I was very young. I was incredibly naive, and I was singing songs that were overtly religious. And it's 40 years ago. And Pip was there, and I knew that he was a sort of big noise, as it were, in that world at the time, because I read Buzz magazine. And I saw that Pip had a certain buzz going on. So I thought, right, I must go and introduce myself to Mr. Pip Wilson. So I went in and he had a tent, he was doing stuff. And I said, hi, Pip, I'm Martin. He said, oh, very nice to meet you, Martin, blah, blah, blah. And then he didn't say anything. I thought, okay. And I lied to him. I said, I really enjoyed your book. I hadn't even read it. It was just, I don't know why I said that. I just did. It was just like, I just filled this gap. And he knew I hadn't read it. Just like that. He said, I remember he said, so tell me what, he said, which particular bit did you enjoy? And I said, well, I just thought overall it was just a really good. But he never mentioned that in all the years, but he knew and I knew. And, it was the start of just a beautiful friendship. Pip, for me, is Mr. Consistency, with the sweet Joan, wherever you are, and the kid. That he just was the same every time, and that was something that I've certainly benefited from whenever I came to him, either happy, sad, or indifferent, whatever it was. He didn't change, and when I got into a little bit of trouble, he just still didn't change. He was as positive as he could be. And the testimonies of everyone is far more elegant than that. But that's what I will always remember. The fact that he never called me out on lying to him. And that he was just the same. A human being fully alive is, I think, what old John Smith used to say. The early forefathers of the church would describe a man of God, and that's how I would see him, a human being fully alive. And he always wanted me to sing the song if I ever did the Stinking Late Show. Baked Beans, that's the other thing I always remember him for. And it's not a song I ever thought that much of, but for some reason, he liked this song. And so, one final time.
Martin Joseph, ladies and gentlemen. Yes! Yeah! Okay. Let's get Phil. Come on up, Phil. Phil Wright. Emma, do you want to come as well? And let's get Willie and Martin Rowe, if he's here. Let's come on up, Martin. I don't know if you're here. He was doing some poetry somewhere.
Is he? He ran off, did he? Gosh. Okay, come on down. Let's talk about YMCA Romford. Phil, you were there. Tell us about what your relationship with Phil, with Pip was. Sorry.
So I met Pip when I was, I can't remember, it was like 14 or 15.
Okay.
And he came to, he left the Mayflower and he came to Romford YMCA.
Yep.
And he came, he didn't come as a youth worker, he came as the hostel manager. Although there was youth work involved in that, obviously we're young residents, but he wasn't a part of the youth program that I was a part of.
Yeah.
But he very quickly became my youth worker. I used to come home from school, get changed, put my Farrah's on and my Tashini t-shirt, go to the YMCA and spend hours with Pip in his office. And he would do youth work stuff. Like, you know, remember he got a pad and he would draw a circle in the middle and just write my name. And then he'd draw outer circles.
Yeah.
And then he would ask me who's close to you in your relationships and stuff.
Yeah.
And then I got to know him more through the family of Anne and Joy and Joan. Yeah. So I became part of the family.
And so when you think of Pip now, you know, in terms of your life and what you're doing, how has Pip shaped and sort of formed you in terms of your formation, I think we were hearing earlier?
It sounds cheesy to say, but apart from my own parents, he was probably the most influential person in my life.
Yeah.
I spent years not trying to be like him, but wanting to be like him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was hugely, hugely, hugely influential in my life.
We should talk about Rolling Magazine.
Yes.
You were involved in Rolling Magazine. And Dave, you should come up and talk about some of this as well, because you were very much involved with Rolling Mag with Phil. Talk about... Do many of us here know when I say Rolling Magazine? Yes, we do. What was that like? Because it seemed such a buzz walking around 20... I don't know how many years ago it was, but Rolling Mag was such a key component of Greenbelt.
It was the highlight of my year. It was the one thing I lived for.
How did it pull together? What was Pip's kind of...
So I... 1985... Pip, Joan and the girls had been coming to Greenbelt for a few years before that, quite a few years before that. We were like, Pip encompassed our youth group and he said, I want to take you all to Greenbelt. And we never heard of it. So we had evenings around their house with dinner and videos and, you know, old programs and looking at it. Yeah. And we came along and he did the Rolling Mag then. Like Dave and Bob were a part of it at the time. And I was just sort of helping out. And it was quite small at that point. I mean, Roy Castle was there and just signed, he did Pip's forward for his book or something. And, it was quite small at that point.
Yeah.
And then it just launched. It just took off. And then Romford YMCA got involved. My group of friends and my peers all became part of a crew.
Yeah.
What Pip did really, really, really well was, and this happened in the Late Show, the Stinking Late Show as well. What you saw at the front was one thing, but what went on backstage was just as busy and big as what happened at the front.
Give us an insight. What do you mean?
So during the Rolling Mag, we'd be testing games backstage. Pip used to say to me, right, got an idea. I need you to go away and make an egg chucking machine. Right, how am I going to do that now?
So
remember. And we used to have, or we'd get to say, right, I've got this idea of a set of stocks that we want to make, or shock shower.
Yeah.
Right. And he said, I need you to get the workmen in the YMCA to build a shower cubicle, and then I want you to try it out. All right, so we had a young person that came to Romford YMCA, remember Baldrick?
Oh, Baldrick. Yeah.
We had one person that came to the YMCA as a Time for God volunteer. A lovely guy. He looked a bit like Ron Williams. Ron Atkinson. Sorry, not Ron Williams. That's a very different person. Yeah.
Keep going.
Put him in the stock.
Yeah.
We called him Baldrick. So he was a great crew member. Pip loved him. So we used to get me, Pip say, right, get Baldrick to go and stand underneath that bit there. You go up and then just pour some paint on him or something like that, or baked beans. So there was lots of fun like that beforehand. So he'd have meetings with the whole of the crew in his office. 20 of us wouldn't be there, that sort of stuff. And, but what was going on backstage?
Yeah.
He got quite, he wasn't a perfectionist, but if he didn't go right, I would know about it as a stage manager.
Right.
So if the baked beans didn't run properly into the funnel and got sort of stuck, I'd know about it after.
Okay. Phil Wright, ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Look, Emma, you were involved in helping Pip, and you were part of Greenbelt as well and very much involved. Tell us a little bit about your involvement in terms of Gutter Feelings, Pip's book.
Yes. So, is that on?
I think, yeah.
Okay. Gut Feelings originally came out in 1985, and it had a foreword from the Bishop of Liverpool. So I was following in auspicious circumstances. So Pip asked if I could work on the manuscript for reissuing it. I was working in, I worked for Church Urban Fund, so I was kind of around sort of some of the issues that Pip was talking about. But I knew Pip, I'd met him at Greenbelt, this is 20 years ago, I met him my first ever Greenbelt. So he asked if I could cast my proofreading eye over it. And I didn't quite know what I was going to get, but he emailed all the files over and it was amazing, but it was also extremely daunting because in the book is all of Pip's life.
Yeah.
It's his journey to being a Christian. It's his history. It's his family history. It's all of his motivations, all of his manifesto for loving people.
Yeah.
So it was no small task. And I was really aware of what I was working on. So my job really was to make it sort of publishable, but also really keep Pip's voice in it because that is the strongest part of this book.
What's the biggest takeaway for you from that, your time and your relationship with Pip? How's it changed you and affected you?
So what I took away from it was Pip's journey from being a leader. And he talks quite movingly about he had to be really broken to really kind of realize how to do his work. And for me, that was very deeply inspiring, actually, yeah. Because somebody who could be so universally loving to everybody and accept everybody's quite deep, yeah. You know, issues, it really kind of made me think about, you know, I just felt a bit rubbish compared to that, really. So just as a role model and as somebody who worked in the space of talking to people, loving people, being available to people, it's just such a huge thing to live to, really. So, yeah, just a massive admiration.
Fantastic. Yeah. Willie Williams, you're here. Thank you.
I am.
And you're best known, I think, across your career for Trouser TV, which was...
Yeah, I peaked early with that. Yeah. Completely, yeah.
Maybe you could introduce that a little bit and then just talk about your time with Pip.
Okay.
And,
well, the Singing Late Show was the... Actually, the Singing Late Show was the late night, after hours, kind of free-form chat show that Pip and often Martin Rowe did. And I was going to say that was the heart of the festival. It's actually not quite true. The backstage of the Stinking Late Show was the heart of the festival, where you could roll up at any time and Joan would be there, make you a cup of tea, and it was wonderful. And I just want to say, after Pip died, and I know it's not my line, but I just wanted to let Joan know that, in my opinion, she was Ginger Rogers. Because, you know, Ginger Rogers did everything Fred Astaire did, but backwards in high heels. And, yeah. And you must know that one, surely. Yeah. So, but absolutely. So, you know, and Pitt was the front and got all the glory, but we all knew who was, you know, the really key one in that relationship. Sorry, lots of fun. And I don't know how it came about. Adrian, the late, great Adrian Reith and I would make video clips around the site because video cameras were new. They were tiny now. They were about... And we'd make these completely free-form, unedited video clips that would sit in the Stinking Late Show. And it was called Trouser Television because Adrian Reith thought that the word trousers was always funny in any context. So there you are, you see? So that was all good. And look, there's a million things that you could say about Pitt, but the... what I really want to say was just how funny he was. And there's one anecdote, for reasons too long and complicated to go into, we spent the millennium together, going into the millennium, with the family, Joan and the girls, Joanne. And how many of us were there? There was about 16 of us. And we all decided we'd go to this completely mad hotel on the California coast called the Madonna Inn. And it's a really mad place, but very American, sort of American dream. And in the morning, we all came down, and there's a very over-the-top kind of diner-like restaurant. And I've always really admired people, or there's a certain type of – there's a strength of character where you can travel the world and just not lose your accent. And most people think I'm Australian, which doesn't say much of my character. But Pip, you know, or St. Helens all the way. So with that, he's looking at the – menu, and there's all this American breakfast menu. It just goes on for miles. And there's one section which said pancakes and waffles. Now, these were, you know, be a waffle and a mountain of cream and strawberries and fried eggs and God knows what else. And so he's looking at the pancakes and waffles, and we're sitting around, and then he goes, I think I'll have a waffle. Right. I said, that's a waffle, Pip. He says, it says waffle. Pancakes, waffles. I'm like, okay, whatever. And eventually the waitress comes over and he looks up and he says, can I help you? And he looks up and says, I think I'll have a pond cake. So, anyway, we could go on, but
tell us about briefly about the new pick. The pick.
Oh yeah. You just... So, like myself, a man of habit, you know, you like to settle in places, and I used to go to this Greasy Spoon Italian, a really classic leftover Italian cafe, just behind Piccadilly Circus in a little side street, and it was called the New Piccadilly. Some irony because it had been there for. But really the full thing for Micah tables, Italian staff, the whole bit. And that became a place to meet. And I was sort of between homes as well. And so in London, that just became my perch. And we would meet there very frequently. In fact, I used to get mail there. I used to get posts there occasionally. So. But Pip being Pip, of course, we ended up, we knew all the staff. And Joy, Ann and Joan, everybody had come in. And I think I had my 30th birthday party in there as well. But, of course, what was lovely, because Pip was there, they just became family. And then it became his hub. You know, he would use it. Now, they thought he was my dad. And so, therefore, they thought Joy and Ann were my sisters, which in many ways they are. But anyway.
Fantastic. Hey, we've got to move on. We're going to have Ben up. I don't know, Paul, if you want to introduce, but let's give a big round for this group here. Dave, Phil, Emma and Willie. That's fantastic. Yeah. We could have a whole day, a week. Let's meet in the pub after. Let's get a tiny tea. Is Ben around?
I'm looking.
Yo.
I'm not seeing him.
Yeah. Well, look, I tell you what, let's get Paul up. Paul Cookson's here, poet extraordinaire and host of The Family Twist for over 150 years at Greenbelt. And Paul is going to read. And just to say as well, it's lovely to be here with the backdrop to the Harry Potter films that they've been able to get from Warner Brothers Studios, which is lovely. So that's here as well. Well, Ben Okafor's on his way, I hope. But Paul, take us through your poetry.
Hi. I've got to go and do The Family Twist in about 20 minutes, which in a way is related to the Stinking Late Show and the Rolling Magazine. It's like I started doing the Late Night Twist many years ago because of things like that. So Pip had a great effect on me. And also, when I started coming to Greenbelt all those years ago, I found the Rolling Mag, Martin and Pip were very, very encouraging of me performing, and they'd always give me a slot, and so that was something I will cherish. And many of you know that I write a poem every day, and I've been doing since COVID started. I'm not going to do all of them now, but I will do two, one that I wrote when we found out the news about Pip, and then the other, the day of the funeral. And then I've actually written something just while we were talking then. Anyway, first one's called Beautiful. Beautiful human person. That's what you always said about us all. And today we're all thinking of you and saying your words about you. A light in the shadows, a ray of northern sunshine. Some people are more than cliches. You were one. Everyone felt better in your presence. We all laughed with you. A force of life, a force for good, a force of joy. Pip Wilson, friend and inspiration. Beautiful human person. And the second poem is called Toodle Pip, Pip. Yesterday, I didn't drive 200 miles there and 200 miles back for your funeral, but in a way, I wish I had. Instead, I watched online. Half sang along with the hymns, heard some of the words of friends, as they spoke about the man they knew and loved so well. The thing about you, Pip, well, one of the many great things was that you always made us feel like we were the centre of your attention. You may not have been our best friend, but you're always our great friend. It was said that you believed we were not human beings, but human becomings. And all of us were walking prayers. Humans becoming walking prayers. Beautiful. And the phrase level 5 is mentioned earlier, and I just jotted these down. Level 5 friendship. Straight in at the deep end. friends on whom you can depend. Friends who see a soul, friends who share theirs too. You here today already have practiced that level with me, with each other. Clear and caring, trusted and trusted, honesty and heartfelt, brief but beautiful. We are here because of you, here because you brought us together. You are not here, yet you are here. Level 5 friendship, straight in at the deep end. Friends on whom we can depend. Thanks, Pip.
Lovely, Paul. Thanks so much, Paul. Man. Beautiful. Lovely. Fab. Brilliant. We are over time. We are over time massively, and I'm getting signals like this, which I think means finish soon, in the next half an hour, an hour, something like that. So, but you see Ben anyway.
I can't.
If you see Ben around on site, he's here to perform, so invite him to, and he might play for you a song or two. But John, do you want to come up? Big John is here, ladies and gentlemen. Come on, quick. Very quick, and then we're going to finish. Yeah. We're going to finish. I think you've got a song for us, John. You're a good friend of Pip.
Yeah, come in the middle.
Yeah. How do you meet Pip?
Oh, God. It was in a tent, big top, many years ago. I walked in, kind of drunk, just seen Dick and Blue play on the main stage. Heard this noise coming out of a tent playing U2 songs. Got to get in there. And this guy shouted from the stage, "Hey, Big John, you are beautiful." And I thought, "Oh, yeah, I'm from Newcastle, you know." And that was the beginning of something. And he spent there. We got to know each other, actually. I was a fan of all of this stuff. Still am, green belt. But we had a child back in 2003.
Me and Julie.
Yeah, Julie. And we couldn't camp that year. So before the internet, we can't come, but I had to come. Green belt, there was something going on, you know. So I booked a hotel out of the blue, came down, got here late, went back to the hotel, baby crying, Julie. And I thought, I need a pint. It's Friday night. I always have a pint on a Friday night. So I went into the bar and, like, I thought, I know this guy. I know that guy.
Yeah.
And it was Pip and Paul Chambers and Mike Iaconelli was there and kind of...
Paul's here.
And I thought, God, I really want to hang out with these guys, but I'm a bit shy. So I kind of hung back and I needed a pint. I went to the bar and there's Pip standing there and I said, "Mr. Wilson."
Yeah.
And he saw a wristband here. Yeah. And he says, "Are you a green belter?" He says, "What's your name?" I said, "John." "No, I know too many Johns," he said. "Big John."
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
And he got you in.
And now I call myself Big John, which is kind of many years later. So that began something amazing. Like, we used to hang out. He used to love the festival, but he put a lot into it. A lot of time, effort. And
you need to play us out because we're going to get into trouble.
Okay.
We have got stories to tell. Down the pub later, Jesus Arms, Big John, lots of stories. There's Paul Chambers here as well with his photography exhibition at the end. More stories to tell. There's Rachel. I'm sorry, Rachel, we're out of time, but we've got so many things. But John, you're going to play a song that you've written there.
Well, can I have a bit of sound on the guitar?
Yeah.
Guitar? All right. We chatted on the phone about this that day, and we chatted for ages, and then I started singing to you over the phone, and you said, "Big John, play the blues." All right. And it's just a refrain. Beautiful humor, you. You're beautiful, human, you, Andy Tim. Ah, beautiful, human, you. You're beautiful, human, you. Watched you dancing when you thought
no one was. And I could still hear you singing. It's all because, it's all because, it's all because of you. You love like you'd never been hurt. Got a feelings rolling in the dirt. Beautiful human, you.
Keep playing. We're out of time, folks. Thank you so much for being here. And for our Darren and the sound crew, we're hideously late. So big round of applause to the crew here, their patience. Thank you for stories. Let's continue the conversation in the tiny tea or the pub. And John's going to play us out, but thanks for being here. We need to get out of this venue. Yeah.
Lots of great sing the song. Sing it. Beautiful human. You Snowy, you're beautiful human. You.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.